Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
Bonjour, and welcome to another episode of Canadian Politics is Boring. My name is Jesse Harley, and with me, as always, is Rhys Waters. Rhys, what do you have for me today?
Bore da. That's Welsh for good morning, because you said bonjour.
Bore da?
Bore da.
Bore da. Good morning, even though it's 9 p.m. at night. Good morning.
There we go. I couldn't remember.
My morning.
Good night. Not nosta. That's good night, I think. I don't know. Are there Welsh-speaking people who listen to this who hate me? Anyway, I'm having a great day. So me and my wife, we've been making cocktails recently, and I invented a cocktail, which is cool.
Really?
Yeah, I call it is light rum, light Nova Scotian rum, and root beer. And I call it a Nova Scotian light beer, and it's incredible.
Wow.
It's good. So I drank two of them while I was cooking on the barbecue. So,
that's it? Just light rum and root beer?
And ice. So it's cold. Because I don't like good, room temperature drinks. despite the stereotype.
There's a fascinating YouTube channel called How to Drink, if you ever were interested in learning how to make more cocktails. The guy's a cocktail master.
If you're ever fascinated in learning how to drink.
We've been having difficulties all these years on drinking liquid. This YouTube channel will help you. Don't go see a doctor. Just watch some YouTube shows on how to drink any liquid whatsoever.
Oh, God. And I've been pouring them up my ass all this time.
I mean, I've heard that is effective. Yeah, it's incredibly deadly, but effective. Okay. Tell me, Cool. Teach me something, Obi-Wan.
Okay. Well, actually,
that's not how that quote goes.
This episode is called, have you ever heard of Tommy Prince?
No.
So
we've well established that I know very little about Canadian politics. That's
well, this is kind of, he's a war hero, but the politics came into his life. So Tommy Prince, the title is Tommy Prince, Canada's Forgotten Rambo. Now, his life is kind of like, it's a mixture of, his life would make an incredible film because it's a mixture of action film and civil rights issues intertwined, and his life is just I'll get into it. So
why don't you get into it, Rhys?
I will get into it. I said I will get into it.
Yeah.
I'm into it. There we go.
Do it. Right.
It's nice in here. So Tommy Prince was an Indigenous Canadian war hero, and one of the country's most decorated non-commissioned officers. And he basically served in the Second World War and Korea. But it was quite a sad story because despite being one of the most decorated war heroes Canada has ever produced, he was forgotten for decades.
You know how much I love sad stories on our comedy podcast, Rhys.
There's some mind-blowing stuff on you. So systematic racism was the cause of him being forgotten largely. So he was born in a canvas tent in 1915 on the Broken Head Reserve, which is like 70 kilometers north of Winnipeg, which is in Manitoba, which we've talked about before.
Yes.
Yes. It's everybody's favorite province. So
it's soon to be mine once we make Manitoba Nights.
So he was one of 11 children. I mean, families were big in those days. My grandfather
Good
was one.
God,
of
11 children. 11.
My grandfather was one of like 14. It's just the way it was back then.
Oh my God. That's insane. Yeah. I don't understand, that's insanity. That's pure insanity.
Well,
hon, we've got 10 children. I think that's enough. Do you? No, not at all. More children. Like, is this just free labor? Is that all? Was this why they're looking at it? Like, is 10 children not enough love for them? Like, what's the reasoning behind having 14 children? Like, that's.
Well, you know, some people like big families.
I guess.
Although it's a good job minivans weren't a thing then, because the vans would have been huge.
It'd be like a minivan chain, like pulling other minivans behind you.
A mini train.
Right, yeah. Like 13 kids. Hon, I'm pregnant again. Thank God. I was worried we weren't going to make it to 14. What? Why? Anyway, sorry. It's mind-boggling to me. Continue, please. Well, he was part of a very reasonably numbered family of 11. Yeah, continue.
Yeah, exactly. Well, kids are expensive. You don't want to go crazy. So he... Like many kind of Indigenous kids from the time, he attended residential school, where obviously he was taught to forget about a lot of his Indigenous heritage.
Which is very sad.
Yeah, and he joined the Army Cadets, where he became an excellent marksman. So basically the thing he loved about the military was as soon as he put his uniform on, he felt like he kind of was recognized, I guess, because people saw the uniform more than they saw anything else. So
that's kind of sad.
He was drawn to that role. So he reluctantly had to drop out of school, though, to earn money for his family in grade 8, and he was working as a lumberjack because it was the Depression, which was an awful time for almost
What year
everyone.
Was this again?
This would have been the Depression, so this would have been like the late 1920s, 1930s right, period. So, so in 1940, he was 24 years old, and he joined the Royal Canadian Engineers and was sent to England during World War II.
What are they, Royal Canadian Engineers? What is?
Well, they
this is like a weird band.
They're a prog rock band. So they mix prog rock with synth, and it's wonderful. So the Royal Canadian Engineers, I believe that military engineers do things like they go, we need a bridge over this river to send 50 tanks over, and they will come in and build a bridge like overnight.
Oh, wow.
Or like, wire up a command center so that they can do things, I think. All the whole time just having like face paint to kind of blend in. It's if you want to be an engineer, it's a pretty exciting way to be an engineer.
Camouflaged bridge building, yeah.
Yeah, that's... yeah, but not for Tommy. He hated it, so he was just busy. He said he was operating a lathe on home guard duty, which he hated. So he joined the army to fight, not sit around drinking tea, which he would have done a lot of in the UK in the 1940s.
Right.
So he answered for a call for parachute.
Just the 40s, please.
Exactly. The 40s, I know. I've had 5 cups of tea just before we recorded this. So
I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
Hold it in, Reese. It makes for a better show. Hold that in.
So there was a call for parachutists in the Canadian Parachute Battalion. And I think that the reason was that not many people wanted to jump out of a plane into kind of fire. So it was kind of an open invite. So who wants to do this? And he was like, I don't want to cut wood. I would rather
not
do this.
Not too many people want to jump out of a plane into a raging fire. That's
exactly. So he joined, and he was then attached to the United States Special Force, or the Green Berets. So basically became part of an elite force pretty quickly. Also known as the Devil's Brigade, which is a really cool name.
It is a cool name.
Yeah. So his platoon sergeant, Al Lennox, said he was brave, he was intelligent. In his early days as a young man, he was out living off the land and getting his own game, learning how to track and to walk right without making a noise. All those attributes came very handy in this type of a unit. So he was behind enemy lines, special forces, and he was able to move quietly, live off the, all the skills he had from the way he grew up meant that in war, he was just the ultimate like special forces soldier, essentially.
He was Rambo. He was the Canadian
Rambo. He was Rambo. Exactly. He was the Canadian Rambo. So then, and also they said that once he was in a uniform, nobody cared about his origin. So all they saw was his rank and the respect he earned on the battlefield of other people. So, and he did some crazy stuff. He did some absolutely crazy stuff.
Very curious. Yes. Tell me. As long as they're not horrifyingly gory, which I know they're going to be because you love telling me shit like that.
Just like unbelievable bravery. So in the winter in Italy in 1944, he volunteered for a nighttime reconnaissance mission and had to run a telephone line 1.5 kilometers into enemy territory. And then he set up an observation
post.
In the winter in 1944 in Italy.
I suppose you could have people listening in if it was wireless. I was going to say, why run a telephone?
Yeah, the telephone cables were how they... So he set up an observation post in an abandoned farmhouse 200 meters from the Germans, and so he could send back information on the enemy positions, but a shell cut the line the following day. So his solution was to dress like an Italian farmer, go out and pretend he was inspecting and repairing his chicken coop, and weeding the crops while the German soldiers looked at him, and he fixed the broken phone line in front of him.
Oh my God, what? Oh my God.
So just like I'm going to think on my feet here. I'm going to just pretend that I'm just looking at the chickens, just weeding the crops. Of course, I'm the kind of farmer who, despite being in the middle of a war, remains on my farm to tend my animals.
So, it's very important.
It's very important. Yeah. Who's going to feed the chickens? So, you know.
But it worked.
But it worked. And
that's amazing. Where did he get the Italian clothes? Farming clothes.
I imagine they were just in the house, probably lying around. Or I hope he didn't take them off a dead farmer.
Well, it is Rambo we're talking about here.
It is Rambo. He probably, yeah, anything for the mission. Right, so yeah. Anyway. So he used to carry a pair of moccasins in his bag with him, and he would never tell anyone where he was going. And apparently he would slip away in the night. And the Germans described him as a ghost or a devil. So he'd sneak across enemy lines, and apparently he would just kill people and steal something and leave things behind, like calling cards, just to freak them out.
Calling cards?
Yeah, just like little things that were out of place so that people knew someone would be there. Or that people would come back and they'd find that, like, they'd wake up and their bunkmate.
Like a metaphorical calling card, not an actual business card.
Not a business card, no.
Okay, like, right. Yeah, that'd be weird, man. That just...
Follow like, just with his Instagram tag and everything. So anyway,
missing your friend? Don't know where he's been? Want to do this to someone else? Give me a call. Yes,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly. Well, you know, we all need to promote ourselves these days. So, you know, there's no shame in it. So like someone would wake up in their bunk and their bunkmate would have had their throat slit for no reason at all. And it was really demoralizing. And his ability to sneak around and do those things, just terrified people. Some even thought he was like an evil spirit or something that was just coming to wreak havoc on their ranks. So what he did for morale was crazy. And that was a lot of that description came from some of the people who fought with him behind enemy lines and kind of in those special forces units. So
some of the people who fought with him were freaked out at thought he was a ghost.
That's where those stories come from. The people who worked with him saying that his ability to kind of, you know, do those things and go across enemy lines and terrorize the enemy without even being detected was legendary.
This is amazing. How have we not heard more about this guy? Like, this is television worthy. This is movie worthy.
He was awarded the first, his first medal he was awarded was the military medal, which where he destroyed four German tanks. And his courage and utter...
With his fists? What did he do? No, how did he do that? Like, just...
Imagine explosives. I don't think he... Like
he beat up four tanks with his bare hands.
Exactly. With a look. He just looked at them and they just fell apart. So he won loads of different medals. He had 11 medals altogether from his time in World War II. So but apparently, and this quote like just not every apparently in this one of the quotes I found, one soldier was a bit put out. So he wasn't impressed that Tommy was going and doing all these things. And the quote said from this soldier, "There goes Prince trying to win another medal to prove he's brave." Which is like...
That just sounds like pure jealousy talking. Like,
stop trying to win the war and make me look bad.
That's an early day hater right there. You talk about haters.
Exactly. Yeah. He would have been commented. He would have been trolling him online. He would have been...
Trying to win the war yourself. Who do you think you are?
I know. Exactly.
That's...
I'm as brave as you. I just choose not to show it. You know?
It's a personal choice. It's very personal.
It's a personal choice.
I could blow up five tanks, but I just don't want to.
I'm just tired. And, I've got other things to do. So... So the sad thing is that once the war ended and he no longer was a soldier with a uniform, he pretty much was treated exactly the same as before he became a soldier and faced kind of a lot of prejudice and racism. And he had a bit of a sad
time. Well, you have to remember something very important, which is that the majority of people out there are morons. Not the people who listen to our show. You guys are great.
No. At least 50% of them aren't.
Yes. The people who listen to our show are highly intelligent people.
he had a bad time. He got divorced from his wife. His father died, and he really struggled to find work. And he ended up as a janitor, and then started his own cleaning business. He tried politics for a while, but didn't like it. And then he ended up being lumberjack again, like he did before World War II, where he went off and had these incredible feats of bravery and proved himself to be incredibly capable, and ended up doing the thing that he'd done before. And then the Korean War broke out. And he re-enlisted in 1950, and he said, I owed something to my friends who died in the Second World War, and he was determined to go back to combat duty to carry on that fight. So he essentially did 2 years in the field, but apparently on Christmas Eve in 1952, during his second tour in Korea, the stress of warfare got to him, and he suffered a breakdown from being shelled by Chinese mortar bombs, essentially. Which led to him kind of eventually being honorably discharged in September 1954. And although it was never diagnosed, a lot of people say that he obviously had PTSD from the warfare. So and then, so by the mid-1970s, he was living in the Salvation Army in Winnipeg in like a room, and his only possessions were like newspaper clippings, and most of his medals had been lost or pawned, apparently. And his final years were spent reliving the terror of the wars, and, you know, going through those kind of flashbacks and things. And he died at the age of 62, largely forgotten when he did pass away as well, which is really sad.
I've got to say, Rhys, our comedy podcast is getting funnier by the minute.
There's a happy ending. There's a happy ending. He has now been treated as a hero ever since. So he's been commemorated on a coin. He's been on plaques. There are murals depicting him. There's a statue in the park at Broken Head Reserve. There are streets in Winnipeg and Calgary. There's a school in Manitoba named after him. The Canadian forces have immortalized him at various sites. Medals have turned up at auction in different places and have been all bought back. And now in the Manitoba Museum, someone purchased one of the medals for like $75,000 and then donated it so that it could feature in the museum as well. But he's still not that widely known. Obviously, he's been celebrated by people, but it's just his life would make the best film ever.
I think arguably
it would be better than Manitoba Nights, and that's a hard thing to admit.
That is, I don't know. I'm on the fence about that. Manitoba Nights is going to be one of the greatest television shows of all time, obviously. But I'd say this might be a close second. This is Canadian's Rambo.
This is probably more likely to get an Oscar than Manitoba Nights. It's more relevant and an important story to tell than a made up adventure about.
In a city that neither one of us have been to.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, and I know this episode, there's not as much funny, zany stuff, but it's just a mind-blowing story to talk about.
It is a mind-blowing story, and honestly, I'm still envisioning him. I don't know if he put on his moccasins, as you said, he took them with him everywhere, but he would sneak out at night and just like cross into enemy territory. And just kill people in the middle of the night in their tents while other people slept and left them alive just to fuck with them. And I'm like, that's insane. That's great. That's next level shit. That's video game shit, man. That's crazy. Yes, let's make a show. Canada's Rambo. Canadian Rambo.
And also,
we'll work on the title. It's a working title.
It's a very loose working title that, don't remember that title. It might change. Do you think, okay, let's just talk about if you were in World War II, do you think you would have been any good?
God, no. God, I don't deal with day-to-day stress as well. Like being shot at every day and night, I'd snap, man. My grandfather was in World War II. He destroyed bridges, actually.
Nice.
Where did he build bridges? One of the two. I think he destroyed bridges. I'm going to go with destroyed.
It's a very subtle distinction between building and destroying bridges.
I do not think I would fare well in, I'd have to be the cook or something, like just away from everything and just like with,
I know, but it
aromatic
doesn't work like
spices
that.
Everywhere.
It doesn't work like that. My grandfather was in the Navy, and he was he joined when he was 15. He lied about his age because he was like determined to be in World War II. And they were like, yeah, fine. You've got a bit of a mustache. So, and he was the cook, and they dropped them behind enemy lines in North Africa. And all they gave him was a Tommy gun and a tin opener. And he was there with, and he used to fight, and he still had to cook as well as fighting.
Oh my God.
So just because you're the cook doesn't mean that you don't see action. He still had to do stuff.
I avoid sketchy streets in a very, like, fairly criminal, crime-free city. I don't think I'd do well in a war. So.
I think I went, and I know this is nothing like real war, but I went paintballing once, and I got shot first.
I love that you had
time.
To clarify that paintball is nothing like real war, just in case anyone out there is...
Just so I'm not saying that this is relevant experience to talk with authority about warfare.
If anyone out there was thinking about joining paintball and you were worried that it was identical to real world wars, don't worry. Reese is here to tell you how and why it's not. So yeah, go ahead, join that paintball team. Reese, tell us why paintball is not like World War II.
So we were kind of like weedy nerds, and we were up against these people who clearly did a lot of paintballing. And every time we had a new round, I would like run at them going, come on guys, let's get them. And then they'd all just shoot me straight away. And I'd just sit down. God. And then I was like, this next time is going to be different. I'm going to be more strategic. And then the same thing happened again. And then I ran, and eventually I ran out of paintballs. So I was just, come on guys, let's go. And then, so I was in Hollywood.
I mean, I have a feeling that in a war, if you did that, you'd probably have similar results. Just saying. I don't know.
The stakes are higher, I'll admit. So maybe I'll like, but you don't get the chance. You don't get it. But imagine though, you didn't get a chance to, you only make that mistake once in war. Whereas in paintballing, you can do it multiple times. You just walk away with some paintball bruises. But if you were that person in World War, in a war, and you were like, come on guys, let's get them, and you, it's just like, there's always that one in the film who always says, yeah, we can do this, and then they just die.
You never see them again. Yeah, it's
never see them again. No. Yeah.
Well, this has been fun.
So, in conclusion, this is an important story to tell, and I'm glad that we had a platform to share it.
I'm glad too. Yeah, no, it's good to be able to like I said, if you're going to pepper our comedy show with sobering episodes now and then, I guess that's okay.
I think you need to go away and research whether your grandfather either destroyed or made bridges. Because both are admirable.
Right?
Both take skill.
I think he built them. I'm pretty sure he built them. Okay, no, cool. Destroyed. No, I said destroyed. Fuck, I don't know.
He was a bridge enthusiast.
Yes, we'll go with that.